Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to Absolutely Intercultural, show 212. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark. And we'll be taking you to Russia and India, as well as hearing about the global importance of the family unit. So how do foreigners react to India? According to Line Mark Rugholt, a Danish intercultural consultant, it can vary widely.
Can you live in India in spite of it being India, or can you live in India with India?
And what is the smallest social unit? Anne von Laufenberg-Behrmann lets us in on that.
Households are the smallest unit of a society, and every development in the world touches families in many ways, not only social and economic ways, also in political ways, in even if you have crisis, financial crisis or wars, always the family members are the persons, household persons, who are touched and affected by all these decisions.
And we'll make another trip to Russia, which supposedly dropped socialism in 1990. But Diana from Russia has a theory about why there are still so many socialist benefits in the country.
I don't know, was it goodwill of the government? Oh, it was certainly goodwill of the society, but maybe just many, our parliament has other things to do and they forget to change some legislation. sometimes it's my feeling.
So first we'll speak with Line Mark Rugholm, who was an intercultural consultant specializing in India for many years. Having had an interest in India since her student days, she decided to try out what it's really like living in India longer term by taking her whole family with her. Let's go, absolutely, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of issues typically came up time and time again?
Well, one thing was for sure the communication style difference. So Danes tend to be rather direct and not so shy on saying, I mean, if something is not working, it's okay to say it. It's okay to say that you have made a mistake. It actually sometimes shows that people has got a strong person. If you can say that I'm sorry, this was a mistake I made, and I'll try to make up for it in this and this way. So India has got Indians. I mean, that is a generalization, but let us try to do that anyways. but there's a more soft way of saying things. And there's this one issue about yes and no, where Danes, they tend to use no a lot more and yes a lot less than Indians. And that was one thing which definitely came out as the outcome of many workshops with both Indian and Danes to get that clarification of how is the use of these words actually different, and how can we ask questions in a different way.
So I would have thought that if you are a Dane and you go off to India to do a project, that you would have done a bit of research and that it wouldn't come as a surprise. But it sounds as though it takes people by surprise time and time again.
I think that actually it has changed in my time. So I've been working as a consultant within this area for around 10 years. And during that time, I mean, the first companies who started having Indians working for them in different setups, they were not very well prepared. And I think it has got to do with, I mean, their line of business. A lot of people haven't necessarily got a lot of training or education within the human side of doing things, the human side of business. They are very they're technical experts. So that is what they do best. So that is one thing. But what I see now in the in companies is that they are much more aware, and a lot of companies, they now collaborate with trainers or consultants doing training for them, and they have got programs running every year So it has become more established.
So it's just the management of the companies that have become more aware of the need. It's not the actual personnel who come prepared.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Maybe both, actually, because Denmark has become more international. And I think it's both, actually.
Did you know that there was an international organization for home economics? It's called the International Federation of Home Economics, and its opinion on home economics is sought by all the major global organizations, such as the UN, ECOSOC, and FAO. Anne von Laufenberg-Biermann is an IFHE executive director in Bonn, Germany, and I talked to her to find out why home economics was so important on a global scale. For example, perhaps you've heard about the newest UN Sustainable Development Goals. Well, IFHE was involved in formulating the final version of these, which came out in 2015. Let's go absolutely sustainable.
And the task, the main aim is to support the aims of the United Nations. And in this task, we have developed statements related to some of the Sustainable Development Goals. We also conduct workshops, world congresses, to exchange knowledge, to improve professional development for all home economists who are members of IFHE.
When I was in secondary school and I was doing what was called domestic science, I had no idea that home economics was so important on a global scale.
The issue is that all decisions which families or communities or households decide, this has an effect on resources on Earth, had effect on their own resources, and has effect on their own well-being as well as on the environment. So households are the smallest unit of a society, and every development in the world touches families in many ways, not only social and economic ways, also in political ways, in even if you have crisis, financial crisis or wars, always the family members are the persons, household persons, who are touched and affected by all these decisions.
Can we talk about the latest project that you're involved with, which is called ProfESUS? And can you tell me what is the basics behind it and why the Federation wants to be involved?
Yes, one key subject of the International Federation for Home Economics, or Home Economics, is a sustainable consumption and production, which is a key issue for the future of the world. And this sustainable consumption and production is also a key topic of Sustainable Development Goals. And it's clear, although if we had the decade for education for sustainable development, we realize that many courses and aims and students, they learn about sustainability and sustainable development, but they did not transform the knowledge and the issues and points they learned into their life. So I think the UNESCO and all the persons, UN Development Program, they learned that we have to do a new approach to so that students who are learning about the significance of sustainable development, sustainable consumption, and sustainable production, they have to learn how to transform the processes into their own life, not only personal life in households, also in their professional life, such as guest-orientated businesses or household-orientated businesses. And our aim is to develop a course and to train teachers to use a new approach in their courses, in their lessons, so that the students not only hear about it and learn some rules about how waste management, water management should be, they should be touched, they should be get kind of sense that it is important that everybody at every time has to think about it and has to live sustainable consumption and production.
So if I go and train to a food preparation course or a hotel management course or something like that, then I should be, what you're saying is that I should be taught by my teachers to do it in a sustainable way.
Yes, I think everybody has to learn that it has a big effect, not only if I put just the issue, I have water, the junk in different pins. It has a big effect what kind of resources I use, if I reuse it or if I don't buy it, I decide if I use a textile one year more or if I throw it away. There are lots of effects, not only for the resources, only for the people who are working in the fields of textiles, for example, or food waste management, for example, the big issue. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to throw away a piece which you don't want to eat, but on the other side there are many people in the world who do not have enough to eat every day, and every decision in every household has an effect on the global level, and that is what we have to learn, and we have to learn to teach to everybody.
Mm-hmm. So this project will be targeting vocational teachers across Europe. Do you think that there are different attitudes to sustainability across different countries?
Yes, sure. That is what we see in the International Federation for Home Economics if we discuss in committees or in international sessions. There are totally different approaches regarding sustainability. And if you see countries such as India or Nigeria, they are far away from sustainable development and sustainable management. Yes, what we discussed at the Profesos project is the question of mindset.
Mm.
In which way can teachers support promoting a mindset which a student can develop or get, so that they are aware, really aware in every day living in their professional field, in which way they can support sustainable development.
Mm.
Perhaps also they can be involved in local projects or in regional projects, or even if they are supporting political kind of strategies. So this is what we are discussing at the project, in which way can we support a mindset that people should get to support sustainable development, sustainable consumption and production worldwide.
Yeah, so when you're talking about teaching, it's not just about knowledge, it's not just about facts. It's actually, in this case, the most important thing is moving people forward in terms of how they behave and how they see their jobs.
Yeah.
That's actually a big challenge.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say that you need to know facts A, B and C. It's less easy to say, how are we going to get our students to act in this way or act in that way.
Yeah.
It's quite a challenge, I think.
Yeah, I think that is what we are realizing in the project.
Yes.
For ASOS. And I think it's a big challenge too for us, but it's interesting, and the team is really, really interested to contribute to such a kind of new teaching. Not new way of teaching.
You can find the address for the Profesos project on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, as well as links to the other people and organisations we mention on the show. Diana Solovieva stayed with us for 3 weeks at the beginning of the year, long enough for me to begin to wonder how capitalist Russia really is, as it became clearer and clearer how much the Russian government offers their citizens, especially when contrasted to China, which is supposed to be one of the last truly socialist countries left on earth. In the end, I just had to ask Diana to list the many benefits she gets as a Russian citizen. Let's go absolutely socialist, or do I mean capitalist?
Okay, well, yeah, actually we inherited a lot of from Soviet Union. I don't know, was it goodwill of the government? Oh, it was certainly goodwill of the society, but maybe just many our parliament has other things to do and they forget to change some legislation. It's sometimes it's my feeling, but because there are some pretty funny legislations. But actually, yeah, what we inherited is very much socialistic, like this early retirement age. Like
so what is the official retirement age in Russia?
In the Central Russia, it is 55 for women and 60 for men.
Right, okay.
And yeah, as I said, in the north is 5 years early, but north means more than half of the country, north and far east.
Okay. Well, what about the health system?
Well, we have free health system. We receive some like health insurance since we're born. And we have quite a developed system of free clinics where you can come. All the urgent case, like a serious damage, serious disease, you go to the hospital, and hospital is for free.
Yeah.
And only in if you prefer some specific medical care, which is expensive, and you wanna pay, it's up to you. You may go to the expensive dentist or expensive specific specialist.
So even the dentist is free?
Well, yes, yeah, it was a big surprise for me because when I lived in St. Petersburg, I never visited free dentist. Also, they were available, but I always thought that's poor quality service. But when I moved to Magadan and I had my problem with my tooth, I asked colleagues around which of private clinics I may go to receive a proper support, and they all said, no, go to the free clinic,
Because
it's better, they provide better, and I receive perfect service just in paying nothing.
So let's carry on looking at this very capitalist country and ask you about the education.
Well, yeah, school education is for free, certainly. All right, now the government changed a little bit for some specific courses, like extra English or something. Might be paid and by parents, but yeah, basically school education is for free, and higher education in the universities is now divided. They provide half positions or vacations for students for free and half for payment. So if your child is well enough trained and educated and he compete and win a competition for this free vacation, he received a free education. And in my family, we have, together with my husband, 3 children, and they all receive a free education in the universities. My son just finished master's in the St. Petersburg State University.
And that's because he passed some sort of entrance exam?
Yes. Okay. You should pass an exam, and if you...
In
a half, which is maybe better prepared.
Now, one of the things that I always say that's good about Denmark is the support for women when they have children. Can you tell me about what the maternity situation is in Russia?
Well, yeah, in Russia, since you became pregnant, you receive a free medical care about you, and probably on the 6 months of pregnancy, women stop working. And she might keep this not working until the child is 3 years old. And she receives 60% of her salary during all this time.
So you have 3 years maternity leave?
Yes.
Yeah. And you're also being paid 60% of your salary?
Yes.
That's better than Denmark.
Really?
It is, yes, absolutely. Okay, so... this very capitalist country is actually perhaps one of the most socialist.
Well, yeah, it's our feeling now when we talk to this year, we work together with Chinese colleagues, and then we realize there's a huge difference in the all social programs between them and Russia. Yeah, we actually start feeling that we are living in a socialist country.
So what sort of differences have you noticed in terms of support between China and Russia?
Well, they don't have free medical care.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ask them about maturity stuff, so I don't know what do they have for here. But certainly they don't have any retirement. Well, I didn't fully understand their system, but what I realize is they fully rely on the children in their old age, so they could not survive, or I don't know if they ever receive any pension.
Mm.
At least they said something about 80 years old, which is...
Goodness, yeah.
Not so many people survive up.
No, indeed, yeah.
And don't forget what Diana told us in a previous show about the free land that the Russian government is offering to people who are willing to move to the far east of the country. Well, that's it for this show. If you have any comments about what you've heard or ideas for what to include in future shows, then don't hesitate to get in touch, either on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com or on our Facebook page, where we post interesting intercultural links several times a week. The next show will be out on the 7th of April, so until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.